Hi, this is David DeSmith. Welcome to a Ryder Cup conversation with Jimmy Kidd. Jimmy Kidd spent nearly 23 years as the estates and golf courses manager at Glen Eagles in Perthshire, Scotland. He project managed the creation of the Jack Nicklaus design centenary course there, served as tournament director and coordinator for 4 Johnnie Walker championships, 8 Scottish Opens, and 4 McDonald's World Match Play events. He helped to coordinate and present Scotland's successful Glen Eagles Ryder Cup bid. And along the way, he and his wife June gave birth to a son, David McClay Kidd, who's gone on to have an illustrious career in golf course design himself. Today, Jimmy and David work together at DMK Design and are building courses around the world as we speak. In this interview, Jimmy talks about the centenary course and the role he expects it to play in the 2014 Ryder Cup matches in September. I wanted to ask you just about a couple of things. One is you mentioned the prevailing wind out of the southwest, I believe you said.
It's out of the southwest, generally in Scotland, yes.
Yeah, okay. So the question is, what happens should they not get that prevailing wind? What happens to the golf course and the challenges they're going to face? Do some of these 6 holes that you listed then become easier? Are there other, are there other holes that come to mind that would then become, difficult because they weren't designed with that prevailing wind in mind?
No, I think that each of those golf holes that I've mentioned will retain the penal and strategic natures or concepts with or without the prevailing wind. The prevailing wind will just be a factor. Each one of those holes that I've mentioned has its own particular defense, if you like, and has its own particular penal and strategic line. The second hole, for instance, if you don't get through that gap with your drive and leave yourself a long iron in, that's a very, very difficult shot to a green that runs right to left on 2 plateaus, right, with a lake on the left, severe bunkers on the right and the left. It's a very difficult shot in there, regardless. Number 4, well, it is a 239 yards, slightly uphill to a green that's quite undulating with a very, very deep bunker on the left-hand side defending what will normally be in this championship rear pin positions. And that bunker will, I think, come into effect with almost every pin position and every one of the 3 days they're playing. I can't see them bringing the pin forward on that green at all at any time. Yep. It's strategically a golf hole that I'm sure they'll make it play at least 200 to 220 yards every time. As number nine is a ferocious par 5 now, 618 yards, I believe it is. Nicklaus took the tee back, put it up into an elevated position, which was in the original design, but then was thought far too difficult. But as the games got, the balls got better, the clubs have got better, the guys are hitting it further, he decided that he would make it a really tough finishing front 9 by extending that par 5 back 618, which brings, if you look at the internet stuff and the fly-throughs that you will see on the net, you'll see that certainly brings the 2 bunkers in that are in the saddle, or left and right of the saddle, the very narrow saddle that you have to play through. If they can get the ball through that saddle, they've got a chance of going for it. If they don't get it through the saddle, there's nothing they can do other than lay up for sure. It's just too much of a burden to go for it. If they get through the saddle, prevailing wind or not, they're faced with what I think the toughest second shot in the entire golf course. If they decide to go for it, they've got a long, narrow lake. They've got a bunker in the front of the green. The green's cross diagonal left to right. It's relatively narrow. It falls off down the left-hand side. It's a really, really tough shot. Yeah. I think a great par 5. Wonderful golf hole. On to number 13. 13, they reckon, is the toughest par 4 on the golf course. It's one that David redesigned. It used to be straight down the hill, and it's changed. I think it's an optical illusion. I think the cross-diagonal left-to-right bunkers in the fairway look as though they're almost together. They confuse you a little bit, so you've got to land it between them or try to keep it down the left-hand side. You're then left with another confusion as you play into the green, because the cross-diagonals in the fairway are left-to-right. The cross-diagonals at the green are right-to-left to a slightly undulating or raised, elevated green. And the right-hand side bunker is a little bit back from the green, so you think it's closer. So if you leave yourself short, good, as I think I've said in that note, good knowledge of that hole is absolutely imperative. The next one, what a cracker. Used to be a par three. David, when he did the work on it, extended it to make it a potentially good drivable par four, because there wasn't another one anywhere on the golf course. But if you want to lay it up, it's very, very tight and well bunkered. Even without a prevailing wind, you've got to be extremely accurate with your layup iron shot. And you know what it's like. I watched it in the Scottish Open the other day there, where guys try to lay up with irons and inevitably a bunker pulls them in, or they drift it, or I don't know what comes into their heads at the time when they're trying to lay up with an iron. They inevitably get themselves into trouble.
Right, right.
But trying to drive that golf hole is very, very difficult, because it's quite similar to number nine, the green itself. It's another diagonal like Jack likes, because he faded the ball a little bit. So his diagonals tend to run left to right. So you can fade one in. You can fade a drive into it. If you try to hit it straight at the pin, you've got a bunker in the middle of the green, at the front edge. You've got a bunker at the back right. You've got a green again that's quite narrow. If you run through it, you've got a pitch back. So it's an internal amount of shots that you can play on it.
Very cool.
16, it doesn't matter whether there's a wind or not, but a wind makes it very, very difficult, David. You have a big bunker in the middle of the fairway that you can either try to carry, or you can lay it up. Most of the guys, I'm sure, will try to carry it, but it's a long way. And if you miss the narrow neck and you end up in the rough on the left, you have no chance of going for the green. So it's just a layup, and the layup has to be very cautiously played, because everything runs down towards the small lake in front, which is about 35, 45 yards back from the green.
Yep.
So it's a great golf hole with a natural stadium, as you probably remembered, all the way around it with all the mounding. A beautiful golf hole.
Yeah. Sure is.
Is that what you wanted to hear?
Yeah, no, that's perfect. And by the way, I've got my little iPhone recorder going here, so that I can record you word for word, and then pull out exactly what you're saying. I don't know how many
17 is not a benign short, not a benign par three. It's a very, very good par three played from the very back sticks. I think the wind would play a very large part of that, a large part in that particular hole. If the wind doesn't blow, it's a straightforward tee up, green down, par three, two bunkers, I think, on the right, two on the left, one on the right. So I don't see that as a very difficult hole if there's no wind at all. 18, I didn't put in as my sixth most difficult, but it's well worth a mention because Jack just spent $1 million on it.
Yeah, right.
And it's very different from when you played it, David.
Yeah, I've watched it. Well, maybe it's been changed since the they had that Johnny Walker event there. Where they had the playoff where they played it over and over and over three or four times. Is that the new design?
That was last year, I think, and it was in play for the first time last year. So if you remember it from last year, that would be very accurate. They lifted the tees up a few yards to try to cut down the elevation change along the length of the golf hole, and they've shortened the hole from 525 to 513. So you can get up into... But you can't be short right. If you're short right, you're stymied behind the spinney of Scotch pine trees. So you've got to keep the ball well left on the dog leg, left to right.
Yeah.
And if you're well left, it gives you a good shot into the green, but you've got to be very careful, again, because all along the right-hand side is bunkered and trapped in a long, narrow green. And if you miss it on the left, you go down into a big bowl. I almost call it like a punch bowl.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's as difficult a golf hole now as number two or number nine. I think those two par fives are really, really difficult. But because number 18 is uphill all the way, it'll play more like 540 or so. And because it's into the setting sun and directly into the prevailing wind, a lot of guys might decide that if there's a prevailing wind there, the better part of valor is to lay up short and then wedge in and try to catch birdie.
Yeah. But would you think it's fair to say that if matches get to that 17th tee, looking at 17 and 18, I mean, those are both, you know, birdie holes for these guys.
These guys will try to close it out on 17. They'll try to knock it in as tight as they possibly can and take birdie there and close the game out. It's not a difficult hole. I would expect a lot of halves in that particular hole. But it's going to be all about the accuracy off the tee. The guy gets closer to the pin and holds the putt, number 17 will make it. As I say, it's a hole that it's not got an awful lot of character to it, but if the wind does blow off the right-hand side, it becomes a really difficult golf hole because it kind of funnels down from the top of the hill down and pushes you left.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay. Jimmy, a couple of years ago at Chicago, when the PGA was setting up that course for the Ryder Cup, you know, they widened fairways. They didn't have very penal rough. You know, they kind of set it up for the American, game, bombing it off the tee a little bit wildly, but, allowing the guys to have some recovery. And, you know, there was a bit of gamesmanship in that. But, you know, the host controls the setup. Do you expect any particular kind of setup for this course for the Ryder Cup matches over there?
Two things that I think will have a major effect on the game at the PGA Centenary course. One of them is that if you're in the rough, you're dead. If you're in the rough at Glen Eagles, it is, seriously penal. The winters are very mild and very wet here in Scotland nowadays, and the fescues are mixed with Holcus lanaticus and soft, lush agricultural grasses, and they're not thin, and it's difficult to find a golf ball. I remember Sandy Lyle hooking one off the 18th tee, and even the spotter couldn't find it in the Johnny Walker Challenge many, many years ago.
Wow.
And he was a very irate guy, and let me tell you, he was not happy.
Oh.
Sorry, I don't think it was Sandy Lyle. I think it was Colin Montgomery. I'm terribly sorry. And he took it out on a spotter. And this was about 20 past 8 in the evening in the second round. And the spotter had been there from about 5 o'clock in the morning or 6 o'clock in the morning. And Monty got a real blasted. He got blasted by the press for taking this young volunteer apart, for not seeing his golf ball going into the rough. And it landed only a few yards away from the spotter, but he still couldn't find the ball.
Wow.
So that's the first thing that I think will be difficult. And believe me, the first hole is not an easy golf hole if the wind's blowing. Here's the other thing that I think will play a great factor in it, and I've talked about it at great length to a lot of people lately, since is I think retaining your focus throughout 18 holes on that golf course are extremely difficult. You get to the second green, and if there are only four games and there are 45,000 people, potentially you could have half that 45,000 people following you if you're the top game that day. You then come off the second green, and every championship that was ever played on the PGA Centenary course at Glen Eagles, the players get themselves onto two big buggies with their caddies, and they take the buggies through the underpass, up the hill, to the next championship tee in number 3. Well, that's what I term a break in focus. That's where I think guys will have some problems. Refocusing again after all of that kind of a hustle and bustle with the crowd and the buggy and getting on a cart, getting to the top of the hill, refocusing and then playing the third hole. The same thing happens again, David, as you get to number 8. You get to number 8, you get make your way through 20,000 people, get onto a buggy, get back down the hill, the fairly longest drive underneath the main road, get to number 9, get off the car, get yourself gathered and refocus again.
Interesting.
That must be a break in concentration in my view.
Yeah, very interesting. That's a great point, Jimmy.
Yeah.
Cool.
I mean, we're doing a co-design with Tom Watson right this minute at Cherkley Manor. David was with him last week for a couple of days, and I think Tom was at Glen Eagles yesterday with Bradley Keegan and Jim Furyk. I think he invited about 20 of the guys, potential guys, to come to Glen Eagles, and only 2 turned up, would you believe?
Wow.
He had 5 on the calendar or on his invitation on his confirmed list, but I think another 3 cooled out, and he only ended up with 2, Bradley Keegan and Jim Furyk. I know that when I play that golf course and I come off the second, or when I was tournament director for Johnny Walkers and such like, just trying to retain concentration and keep the guys in the, what would you call it, in the zone. I think it gets kind of broken down when you go from two up that steep hill with everything that's going on around you to try to refocus again on the third tee. And the third holes are very, very tough. I was almost tempted to say it was one of my six, but I think they'll stay well left on that one. And the second shot is crucial on it.
Yeah. Very good. What are your expectations, Jimmy, as far as the weather? I mean, obviously, that's
my expectations as far as the weather. I think that I do believe that this particular Ryder Cup has been brought forward 1 week of its original dates at Celtic Manor and the K Club. Now, you know that weather runs in cycles, and the week that was previously selected, which I think was the first week in October, or the very last couple of days of September, first week in October, for this Celtic Manor and K Club were both absolutely disastrous weather-wise. The golf courses were turned into mud baths. They were playing preferred lies, I believe, at Celtic Manor. But in both instances, at Celtic Manor and at the K Club, the week previously was an absolutely wonderful week.
Right. You're right. It was.
And everyone said, I wish we'd played it last week. And I'm not sure if that was part of the decision to bring the date forward 1 week. But it might just be the best thing that ever happened. It might just be. It could be that September, end of September week in Scotland would be really, really good.
Yeah. Okay. The couple of times I've played that course, they were not nice days, and the course, you know, played and stayed wet. Now I'm guessing that, you know, they've done probably quite a bit of work with, you know, drainage, as, you know, as David's been in doing these tweaks and Jack, you know, working on the 18th. It probably doesn't stay as wet as it did, you know, 10 years ago when I played it.
It doesn't stay as wet as it used to do, but the fairways are still can still be relatively soft and relatively wet. The only good news is that I do believe that this summer has been pretty open. We've had quite a fair percentage of sun. We've had a fair percentage of rain, but it hasn't been that torrential stuff that completely soaks the place. The only thing is, and the big difference with regards to Scottish rain, is what we call drizzle, if you remember it, D-R-I-Z-Z-L-E.
Yep.
And that drizzle, combine it with a Scottish mist or a hail off the east coast, if it comes into those hills, the Ochil Hills behind, nothing dries out. Everything is miserable. The golfers are miserable. The spectators are miserable. The golf course becomes a serious slog because it is a very long track.
Yeah.
If you take the distance, I think from beginning to end walking, it's maybe somewhere around 7.5-8 miles or something. Seven and a half miles. It's a long track. Long track. Such a long track that, believe me, I don't know whether you quote it or not, but the caddies at Gleneagles are not terribly keen on going down there.
Yeah. Oh, I bet they're not. Wow.
Well, they hate it. They absolutely hate it. They would rather go in Kings and Queens. And the Kings is a big enough track, but it's nothing like the PGA Centenary course. Of course, you know that was built on the largest landmass at Gleneagles. It was built over 250 acres.
Wow.
The Kings course is built over 235. And the reason for the 250 acres was that at the end of the day, our concept was that when we had four golf courses at Gleneagles when I started there in 1983, Kings, Queens, Princes and Glendevon. Princes and Glendevon would take no amount of round in a year. Everyone wanted Kings and Queens. So the concept was, let's build a third golf course of commensurate quality to Kings and Queens as an offering to our 110,000 hotel guests and visitors and non-residential golfers and their members. And as it worked out, the Kings and Queens still take more rounds in a year than the PGA Centenary course.
Wow, interesting.
Yeah.
Very cool. Jimmy, run through for me, you know, all of your titles and your involvements at Gleneagles. You know, I know that you were involved, obviously, in building the golf course, and you were the course superintendent, but I want to make sure I have all the right titles for you.
I was generally, for most of my time at Gleneagles, the estates and golf courses manager.
Estates and golf courses manager,
estates
okay.
Estates and golf courses manager.
Yeah, Got it.
And it was my responsibility to ensure that my superintendents maintained the four golf courses in the first instance, but the three golf courses to international five-star standards. I was also responsible for the project management of the and construction of the PGA Centenary Golf Course in conjunction with Jack Nicklaus, the selected and chosen designer. Now, that started in about 1987 with the purchase of, I was responsible in conjunction with my directors for the selection and the purchase of the additional lands required out with what we had on the Princes and the Glendevin to put together a 250-acre golf course of commensurate quality to host world championship events. At that time, we thought Greg Norman was going to host or going to set up a Greg Norman World Tour, and he was talking about selecting eight venues worldwide for the Greg Norman World Tour, and we thought we could possibly be one of those, and we were in tentative discussions with him. But, of course, over and above that, we had certainly hoped that we could host a Ryder Cup in the future, and we managed to do that. I was responsible for coordination of eight Scottish Open Championships from 1987 till 1994.
Yeah.
I did, I think, four McDonald's World Match Play Invitational Tournaments and four Johnny Walkers.
Got it. And you were also involved in the effort to bring the Ryder Cup to Scotland and to Glen Eagles, correct?
I was one of the team that coordinated the bid for the Ryder Cup and presented it to Ryder Cup Limited. It was my responsibility to produce a document, which they cost £100,000 each, would you believe, and we only put together 100 of them. But it was my department that coordinated the document, and it was myself that presented the external part of the document. Obviously, I didn't present what the hotel would bring to the party, but it was my responsibility to present what the external aspects of the hotel could bring to the party from the point of view of what facilities we had to a standard that could host a Ryder Cup.